Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this meeting of Stafford Borough Council Planning Committee. I have to read this out. My name is Brendan McKeown and I'll be chairing this meeting. A couple of points: if you have a mobile phone, please turn it off or turn it to silent. And can I ask that any members of the public to refrain from commenting from the public gallery? If there is any disruption, we might ask you to leave. On my right, I have officers from the Planning Department, and on my left, I have officers from the Law and Governance Department. Officers from the Planning Department will present each the only application as it appears on the agenda. Members of the public who have indicated to speak will be given 10 minutes. I will indicate when they've used up 9 of them. Ward members are also entitled to speak for up to 10 minutes. An audio recording is being taken of this meeting, which shall be published on the Council's website. Members of the committee are reminded they do not enjoy any of the immunity as that enjoyed by our colleagues in Parliament. Members may only deal with the planning application before them in accordance with the National Planning Policy Framework and the local plan, together with any other relevant planning matters. So we now move on to the agenda. Do we have apologies?
Councillor Cross, substituted by Councillor Beattie. Councillor James, substituted by Councillor Edgela. Councillor Hobbs and Councillor D. McNaughton.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Any declarations of interest or lobbying? We should just record this.
We should really.
I know, yeah.
Again, I represent Trent, but have no bearing on their planning decisions.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Thank you. So we now move on to the agenda proper, and we start at page 3. Planning application 24/38719, Stallington Spring, Stallington Road, Blythe Bridge. Tom?
Thank you, Chair. So as previously set out at last week's meeting, the proposal relates to the construction and operation of a solar array for a 40-year period, which would generate up to 30 megawatts of electricity, and this would be situated on agricultural land between the villages of Fulford, Sadley Green and Stallington. I'll just bring up an image for you here. So if you look on this, there's Sadley Green's here, Fulford is just to the south of the site, and then Stallington is up in this area here. And the A50 runs to the north with Blythe Bridge further to the north. Just a matter of order really in terms of the addendum report, that's actually at the back of the agenda on page 67, so it's not actually at the top. Since the last committee report was published, we've also received 12 additional neighbour representations, which have raised a number of concerns, including the landscape impact of the development, its effect on highway safety, particularly from HGVs during the construction phase, why it hasn't been located on brownfield land rather than a greenfield site, raises noise concerns, the impact on wildlife and potential loss of greenbelt land. In addition to this, we've also received a comment from Staffordshire Fire and Rescue. This requested that additional information is provided regarding the battery energy storage system. However, I've had discussions with the officer from the Fire Authority who made those comments and made him aware that his colleague had previously agreed that these matters could be addressed via a condition securing the provision of a battery safety management plan. Condition 6 in the original report would secure this, and that's on page 56 of the agenda. In terms of issues, the application was deferred, as you know, at the special committee last week, pending clarification on the designation of the land. Section 1 of the addendum report sets out why officers consider that the site represents grey belt land and therefore differs from the conclusions reached on the gypsy site nearby, which was referred to at the meeting, which we concluded was green belt land. The addendum report at paragraph 5.1 also confirms that the development would connect to the Forsbrook substation and that the grid connection has already been secured with an all works offer in place since 2022. Under this agreement, the distribution network operator is responsible for delivering the connection between the site and the substation. Right, in terms of the actual development itself, as you can see on the slide here, this is the general layout of the development with the panels in grey, with the proposed access off Savilly Green Road, as we saw on our site visit down to the south, with public footpaths which cross through the site here and up to the north, and then there's a further footpath in the pink here as well. So I'll just bring up the images of the proposed access, it's quite a few slides in this presentation, so I'll just have to skim through them. So we've got the access points to the south here, as I previously said, and the actual details of the access. Sorry, if I can get my cursor working. Yeah, so the access point is here. So it will require the removal of 90 metres of hedgerow along Savilly Green Road to provide the access and necessary visibility splays, although there will be replacement planting across the site to compensate for this. And the layout plan, going off the layout plan, this shows the substation here, the inventors, and the various infrastructure is identified in the different areas across the site, with the orange access track being the main access track within the development itself. And in terms of the infrastructure which is to be provided across the development, so that's an example of the panels. There'll also be a construction compound with the elevations there, a inventory and storage layout, and that's the sort of elevations of the infrastructure equipment, and a battery storage enclosure, and then that's the layout of the proposed substation. In terms of the key viewpoints of the site in relation to its landscape visual impact, the landscape visual impact assessment which has been provided identified 10 key viewpoints that would be affected, some of which we visited on the site visit. The first of those viewpoints is to the north of Fulford Church and Fulford Hall Farm. So this is showing the existing situation from that footpath. And then this image here is showing the layout of the panels as proposed at the time of their installation. There's another image. And then this would be the visual impact after year 15 from those viewpoints. Then the second viewpoint was at the main access off Savilly Green Road. So the top image is the existing situation, middle image is the development once the access is installed, and then the bottom image is after 15 years. And again, this is viewpoint 3, which is at Lower Gorsty Birch Farm off Stallington Road. This is where we visited on the site visit. So these are sort of the existing images from that location, and then this is the visuals after year one. There, the panels are in the distance here, so you won't see them in the immediate foreground. And then that's after year 15. And from viewpoint 4, which is the footpath to the north of the site, again you can see the existing situation. And then the bottom image is the position once the panels are installed. And viewpoint 5 is where we stopped on site in Stallington, on Stallington Road. And again, you can see the existing and proposed visual impacts from that key viewpoint. And viewpoint six, this is land off Long Lane to the south of Fulford. Again, we stopped at this position on the site visit, and again you can see the existing and proposed visuals from that viewpoint. And then this is viewpoint seven, existing and proposed. Again, we stopped on the site visit, that's by Blythe Cricket Club, Creswell Road, where we stopped. That, I think that was our first stopping point on the site visit. And then viewpoints eight and nine are more distant views, so obviously the impact's going to be a lot less. And finally, the 10th viewpoint was public footpath three for Fulford to the west of the site. And you can see this is the existing situation, and then you can just about make out the panels there at year zero, and then again at year 15.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Thank you. We have a speaker in objection, Councillor Janet Crossley. Welcome back.
Hello.
You know the form?
I do.
You're good.
I hope it's the last time.
Are you ready?
Okay. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Last week, I spoke about the devastating effects of this proposal on residents of Fulford Parish and its neighbours in the Staffordshire Moorlands. And what I said still very much applies. This time, I'm going to speak about the proposed redesignation of Greenbelt land to Greybelt, purely for the purposes of this application. Section 13 of the MPPF is concerned with the protection of Greenbelt land. Government policy at paragraph 145 clearly states that Greenbelt boundaries should only be altered where exceptional circumstances are fully evidenced and justified through the preparation or updating of local plans. The land on which this application stands is Greenbelt. The only formal and adopted local plan, 2011-31, says so. Local planning authorities decide which land is designated as Greenbelt through formal local plans, and any changes to these boundaries must go through careful consultation and approval. No consultation, careful or otherwise, has taken place. Only the local council, through its local plan, or central government through formal policy changes, can redefine or release Greenbelt land for development. Paragraph 146 states exceptional circumstances in this context include, but are not limited to, instances where an authority cannot meet its identified need for other development through other means. Paragraph 147 says that before concluding that exceptional circumstances exist to justify changes to the Greenbelt boundaries, the Strategic Policymaking Authority should be able to demonstrate that it has examined fully all of the reasonable options for meeting its identified need for development. No such demonstration has taken place. The National Planning Policy Framework imposes a duty to consider suitable brownfield sites and underutilised land, and that duty has been totally neglected in this application. This 72-page report mentions brownfield sites only twice, and both times it is in objections to the application. The report states at 3.9 that the development of schemes for the generation of renewable energy will be supported where there is no harm to residential amenity. This proposal would give rise to significant harm to residential amenity. The objectors say so. 3.21 states that the development is 0.7 kilometres from Blythe Bridge, but makes the argument that the development has a separation distance from Stoke-on-Trent, so does not result in unrestricted sprawl of large built-up areas. It fails to mention that Blythe Bridge abuts with Stoke-on-Trent with housing and a retail park, so there is no separation distance and would result in unrestricted sprawl. The impact should be high. The report mentions on several occasions that operation of the solar farm is temporary and that the land will be returned to its original state after 40 years. With all due respect, I don't see anyone in front of me, and I include myself in that, who is likely to be around in 40 years' time. At 110 years old, I won't be here to say, oh look, they're trying to give us back what we already had 40 years ago before they destroyed it. Temporary it is not. Effective consultation was not carried out with the local community by the applicant. Only one site notice was posted on a stile within the site. There was no site notice at the proposed entrance or anywhere around the site periphery. The site notice expired nearly 2 years ago. The applicant has completely failed to provide details of how connectivity would be made over the A50 trunk road, a Network Rail main line currently in the process of being electrified, and the River Blythe, all of which lie in the Staffordshire Moorlands, other than saying the applicant anticipates that this connection would be a buried cable along the road. How utterly unacceptable a proposal to the ruination of people's lives is this flimsy explanation. So in summary, the land is in the Greenbelt. Paragraph 153, the proposed development constitutes inappropriate development in the Greenbelt. Paragraph 154, the proposal is not compatible with uses considered appropriate in the Greenbelt, and the proposed development does not meet any of the listed exceptions. Paragraph 155 states quite categorically that sites for renewable energy are not a listed exception. The proposed development would set a precedent for inappropriate development in the Greenbelt and creates further challenges to the viability of vacant brownfields within the borough, including sites in the emerging plan. The Friends of the Earth policy interactive map identifies nearby potential sites for solar development outside of the Greenbelt. The proposed development would encroach into the open countryside as accepted in this report. It would result in the loss of productive farmland that contributes positively to food production and wildlife habitats. Allowing inappropriate development on active farmland could sterilise the land for future agricultural use, as the condition of the land would deteriorate during operation of the solar farm. The proposal is entirely at odds with the very recent refusal of Planning Commission for an illegal traveller site just yards away from this proposed site, and would therefore give rise to a reason for an appeal in that decision. It was refused as it was in the Greenbelt, as is this proposal. It was refused as there were available sites in the borough for this use. There is nothing in this 72-page report that even hints that available brownfield sites have been considered, as the MPPF states they should. The addendum report states that 11 additional comments mention sufficient brownfield sites available to accommodate the development, but that these additional comments do not raise any new issues to the matters raised in the initial report. I repeat, nowhere in the initial report are available brownfield sites mentioned other than by objectors. Once again, I implore you to refuse this application and leave our green and pleasant land just as that. All the harm that has been identified in this report, the visual impact, the harm to the setting of non-designated heritage sites, the harm to landscape character and visual amenity can all be eliminated altogether if this development is located on available brownfield sites. Thank you for your time and consideration, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Councillor Crossley. Thank you. Supporters Claire Chamberlain, Sarah Rocks and Beth Thomas. Thank you for being in the same order as you were last time. It helped a lot. Okay, so you have 10 minutes between you.
My name is Claire Chamberlain, Senior Development Project Manager for RES. Thank you for allowing me to address the Planning Committee. I'll be joined by my colleagues Beth Thomas from Ardian, our Planning Consultant on this project, and Sarah Rocks, who is also from RES, in that order. Two of the major challenges currently faced by the UK are energy security and the need for more homegrown electricity to protect consumers from volatile gas and oil prices, and the impact of climate change on our weather, agriculture, infrastructure, and ecosystems. We can see the impacts on our weather with the two recent heat waves we've already experienced across the UK this year, and another on the way. To address these challenges, the UK government have set two ambitious targets: a decarbonised power system by 2030 and net zero by 2050. The government has confirmed that electricity generation from homegrown large-scale solar will play a critical role in meeting these targets. This is recognised in the National Policy Statement for Renewable Energy Infrastructure, which states, "Solar is a key part of the government's strategy for low-cost decarbonisation of the energy sector. It is acknowledged that around 60% of this must come from large-scale ground-mounted solar." It is also recognised in the National Planning Policy Framework, or NPPF for short, which states that significant weight should be given to the benefits associated with renewable and low carbon energy generation and the proposal's contribution to a net zero future. Leaford Solar Farm would be capable of producing up to 30 megawatts of clean energy, the equivalent of supplying 8,000 homes every year, as well as preventing 675,000 tonnes of carbon dioxide emissions over its 40-year lifetime compared to the equivalent fossil fuel generation. Leaford also includes battery energy storage, localised at the inverters, storing electricity during times of high generation and releasing it when it's most needed, linked to the solar panels rather than having a separate grid connection. The grid route is anticipated to be underground and back to the Forsbrook substation. As well as being readily deployed at scale, large-scale solar is one of the cheapest forms of new electricity generation and shown to be 3 times cheaper than polluting gas. This makes solar farms like Leaford not just good for the environment, but also for the consumer. The site for the Leaford solar farm was chosen for its good solar irradiation levels, its location outside of any statutory environmental, archaeological, and landscape designations, and its sufficient distance from potentially sensitive residential receptors. I just wanted to note an alternatives assessment has also been undertaken and submitted as part of the application. Throughout the development process, we listened carefully to the consultees and the local community. Their feedback directly helped shape the final design with a number of changes made as part of the iterative design process. These changes included a reduction in the size of the preliminary design by nearly 40 acres, removing the southeastern and southwestern fields, removal of solar infrastructure and additional new and infill planting of hedgerows and trees to reduce potential visibility, and the removal of panels to further protect existing trees and to allow the reinstatement of a historical field boundary. All of this means that the site is not visible from the vast majority of the viewpoints due to intervening planting that already exists. There are two public rights of way, Fulford 12 and 15, sorry, if you wouldn't mind going to the next slide, thank you, which cross the site and have been carefully considered as part of the design and will remain open throughout all phases of the project. Significant setback distances have been achieved between the solar infrastructure and the footpaths. In the case of footpath 12, the southern of the two that are pointed out to the south of the site, a distance of 84 metres from panel to panel, and for footpath 15, the northern of the two southern, there is a distance of 44 metres from panel to panel. We have included extensive landscape planting to protect the footpath amenity value, and the inverters and battery storage units have been positioned specifically away from all footpaths and a minimum of 326 metres from the closest property. We will continue to engage with users of the footpaths on how the Leaford Solar Farm can provide local benefit through improvements to the footpath network. For example, we are aware that some routes can become waterlogged and inaccessible during winter months and periods of rainfall and overgrown in the summer months. And this is something RES is committed to addressing as part of the development. Our commitment to protecting and enhancing the footpaths on site is demonstrated in the public right-of-way management plan that accompanies the application.
Solar farms are temporary in nature, and the land can be returned to its original state once the operational lifetime is over. Therefore, it is important to note that the Leaford proposal would not lead to any reclassification of greenbelt lands, with such designations only being able to be changed by a local plan review, and no such changes proposed or required here. The Leaford site has been agreed and confirmed as Grey Beltland, as defined within the revised NCPF, and therefore deemed appropriate development in the Greenbelt. It would not result in unrestricted sprawl, neighbouring towns merging, harm to the setting and character of historic towns, or a permanent addition to the countryside. The application before you today is for temporary consent for dual purposes: the generation of renewable electricity from solar PV technology and continued agricultural use. The land is currently used for cattle grazing, and it is proposed that sheep farming will continue the agricultural use of the land throughout the operational lifetime of the site. The Leaford project would not pose a threat to food security, and it is important to note that approximately 95% of the land which would be used by the solar farm has not been classified as best and most versatile. The UK's government's food security report, published in December 2021, states that the biggest medium to long term risk to the UK's domestic production comes from climate change and other environmental pressures like soil degradation, water quality and biodiversity. Leaford would help tackle climate change and is specifically designed to enable continued agricultural use. Solar farms like Leaford also help regenerate soil quality and can contribute to the continued availability of quality agricultural acreage for future generations. Through a comprehensive landscape and ecological management plan, Leaford could deliver notable biodiversity enhancements. The project is estimated to bring a biodiversity net gain of 74% for habitat units and of 22% for hedgerow units. Measures include the improvement of existing grassland, which is currently of low ecological value due to regular fertiliser use and extensive grazing. Around 1.4 kilometres of new hedgerow would be added, as well as enhancing approximately 1.5 kilometres of existing hedgerow. Alongside the notable biodiversity improvements, these measures will significantly reduce potential visibility of the solar farm. We welcome the Council's independent landscape expert's conclusion that a well-considered approach has been taken to the landscape for this scheme. Potential significant effects, other than those occurring within the site itself and its immediate community, would be mitigated through the landscape measures we propose, and as such, accord with policies N1 and N8 of the plan for staff. Could you flip back to the previous slide, please? Thank you.
With the environmental and ecological benefits of Leaford Solar Farm clear to see, the proposal could also deliver economic benefit to the local area. RES has a strong track record of working closely with the local supply chain around its renewable energy projects across the whole project lifecycle, maximising inward investment opportunities wherever possible. The main opportunities arise during the construction phase when simply qualified local firms are invited to bid for the different construction services. Construction materials are sourced locally, and local hospitality and other services are used wherever possible. During the operation, there could be opportunities for local companies such as landscaping management and site maintenance, while the project would also pay business rates to Stafford Borough Council. Whilst not a material planning consideration, if the project is consented, RES looks forward to continuing to consult on meaningful local benefits which could amount to up to $250,000 over the lifetime of the project. Potential benefits raised by the community during consultation, which we are keen to explore further, include discounted electricity bills, which could be delivered by RES's local electricity discount scheme, road safety improvements on Saverley Green Road, and the improvements to the footpath network already mentioned, which would improve accessibility and usability.
You have 1 minute.
In summary, the planning balance is strongly in favour of this proposal. It delivers substantial renewable energy and biodiversity benefits, and any environmental effects are limited, localised and mitigatable, with no likely significant adverse effects arising. The application is supported by a comprehensive suite of technical assessments demonstrating this position, and it is notable that there are no objections from technical statutory consultees. Granting permission today would provide certainty and allow these benefits to be realised as soon as possible for the local area, helping deliver renewable energy generation when it is most needed. In line with the Planning Officer's recommendation, we respectfully ask the Planning Committee to support this application.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Now, I gather that if questions are asked, you all want to come back to the table. Okay, right.
Should we just leave the chairs?
Councillor Mike Dodson is unfortunately not able to be with us today, but he has a written statement which Tom will read out.
Okay, thank you, Chair. This statement sets out that no weight has been given to the cumulative effect of development on the villages surrounding the site. Members should not consider this application in isolation. Within the immediate area, there are over 300 new homes being constructed adjacent to the A50 roundabout, and a further 700 homes recently approved on the eastern edge of Saverley Green. Together with this proposal, these developments will fundamentally change the character of the countryside, separating Blythebridge, Forsbrook and Fulford. One of the five purposes of the Greenbelt, as set out in paragraph 143 of the National Planning Policy Framework, is to prevent neighbouring towns from merging into one another and to safeguard the countryside from encroachment. While each development may appear acceptable when viewed individually, members must also consider the cumulative impact on openness, rural character, and the long-established separation between these communities. Residents do not experience planning applications one at a time, they experience the combined effect of every approval. The application repeatedly refers to the development as temporary because it has a proposed operational lifespan of 40 years. 40 years is not temporary in any meaningful sense for the communities who live here. It represents two generations. Many residents living beside this site today will spend the remainder of their lives looking at this development. Children born this year may be raising families of their own before the site is ever removed. The National Planning Policy Framework recognises that even temporary development can have a significant effect where it changes the character of an area for a prolonged period. 40 years should therefore be regarded as a very significant period when assessing the planning balance. The application also assumes that after four decades and potentially several changes of ownership, every element of the development will simply be removed and the land restored. Experience tells us that enforcement over such timescales is far from straightforward. Stafford Borough Council has already experienced the practical difficulties of enforcing long-term planning obligations elsewhere. If members are minded to approve this application, they should at the very least require robust, legally enforceable mechanisms and appropriate financial security to ensure that restoration is actively delivered regardless of who owns the site in 2066. Members should also consider the effect on the amenity of those who live, work and walk in this area. This proposal is not simply a field of solar panels. It introduces security fencing, CCTV cameras, inverter substations, access tracks, maintenance traffic and associated infrastructure across a substantial area of open countryside. Public rights of way currently provide an opportunity to enjoy an open rural landscape. For the next 40 years, those same routes would instead pass through or alongside a large-scale industrial energy development. Landscape planting may soften some of the views over time, but it cannot recreate the openness and tranquility that would be lost. Policy requires development to protect the character of the countryside and the amenity enjoyed by existing residents and users of the public right of way. Members must decide whether that objective is genuinely achieved here. Finally, members are not being asked whether renewable energy is needed. It undoubtedly is. You are being asked whether this particular proposal on this particular site represents sustainable development when all of its impacts are considered together. When the permanent erosion of Greenbelt openness, the cumulative urbanisation of the surrounding villages, the loss of rural amenity, the impact on public enjoyment of the countryside, the uncertainty of restoration after 40 years, and the unresolved questions surrounding future infrastructure are all weighed in the balance. I do not believe the applicant has demonstrated that is the right development in the right place. For those reasons, I respectfully ask members to defer this application for further information, or if they are satisfied that they have the sufficient evidence before them today, to refuse planning permission. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you very much. Who wants to go first? Scott Spencer.
Thank you. I think fundamentally this comes down to the redesignation from Greenbelt to Greybelt and the impact that that will have for future applications of any other development that happens. I think we've just heard from the council that there are housing applications that have been put in, extending Blythe Bridge, extending nearby village. In 40 years' time, these villages, as in other places, could become towns. So you could say that by redesignating this as Greybelt, you are allowing the sprawl of the interconnection of towns and so forth. I understand we are looking at this application at this present time in its current state. And in that respect, I think that the redesignation of from Greenbelt to Greybelt is set on a matrix, which I don't think this hits. I think it is purely based on a independent consideration of each person that's looked at it, and it's not based on actual fact-based information. And I think the erosion of the Greenbelt in this location would be avoided, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Andy McNaughton?
Yeah, that's what bothers me, you know, the whole definition of from Greenbelt to Greybelt, and you hear lots of different sections of the planning quoted at you, and it's difficult to know the difference. And the argument about the other side, was that refused before they changed the law where they started creating Greybelt? Because that happened quite recently, didn't it? So is that why this is Greybelt now? Or
that, are you referring to last week's meeting for the solar farm? Yeah, because that's not in the Greenbelt, that was actually in the open countryside. So this doesn't apply to that scheme, didn't apply to that scheme. It was just classified as open countryside.
So why is this Greybelt again then? Is that because it's...
Yeah, it's essentially Greybelt isn't a redesignation of Greenbelt land. It is an update to the National Planning Policy Framework, which sets out a series of criteria which developments should be assessed against. If those developments meet that criteria, then it represents Greybelt land. So if members disagree with what us as officers are saying in this situation and the numerous appeal decisions that we've referred to in the report, you'll need to go through every single criteria and assess why you do not feel it hits those criteria. So that's the process you'll need to go through in assessing the Greenbelt / Greybelt debate.
Okay,
Councillor Francis Beattie.
The difficulty I have is the problem of assessing whether this site is preferable to another site across the borough. Because you look at this site, which is obviously green belt, and we want to protect it. There are other sites across the borough which may be more appropriate, but we're having to look at this in its own right without reference to what might be available separately. I'm putting you off by talking.
Sorry.
Joy.
Would you like to ask the applicants or agents directly which other sites they look at?
Yes, I think.
Sure, hang on, just one moment.
It's the principle behind it.
Exactly, and if we are going to hear that they've looked at another site, you've got a room full of councillors here.
Yes.
Who may form a predetermined view on this application.
It's only mentioned in the report that brownfield sites should be used rather than this one.
I don't think now is the time to invite them to give us.
Okay, right, fine.
With all due respect, Councillor.
What I would like to ask is the officers, not
yeah.
the applicants, why we don't look at alternative sites as being preferable to this site.
Yeah,
and I'm saying that in a sense without prejudice because I've got other sites in my ward, so I've got all those problems.
Yeah, there's no requirement to follow a sequential approach for this type of development in policy terms. The applicants have done an alternative site search and submitted a document with this planning application which we've assessed and consider have taken into account when reaching the conclusion on the actual decision.
So it all comes down to the grey belt issue.
Yes, in terms of principles, and then obviously you've got the other considerations like landscape character to obviously come into after that point. But yeah, in terms of statutory principles.
In green belt, it was it created, what year was that?
47, was it?
Yeah, on the planning system.
Yeah.
1947. Has there ever been any new green belt added to that since 1947?
I think so.
I need to go back to going to university.
Yeah.
And it was to protect sprawl, I think.
That's correct. That's the concept of greenbelt. That's why it was introduced. So,
around
the main cities, etc. So we've got the North Midlands greenbelt in this instance.
Don't generally the public think anything that's green is greenbelt?
No.
So I mean, it's not right either.
Greenbelt is not about the quality of the landscape.
Yeah. No.
It's to achieve those purposes of keeping land open.
Yeah.
In terms of the greenbelt boundary, we're not looking at any revision to greenbelt boundaries in the consideration of this application.
Yeah.
So all we're applying is the updated NPPF, December 24, the introduction of grey belt under the overall concept of greenbelt.
Councillor Jill Hood first. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. I wonder if we could just have a look at the photograph of Stallington where the bus stopped on that tiny roundabout.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry, just come past it. There you go.
Okay, so one of the ladies from the applicant said that there would not be many visible forms from the majority of the viewpoints. Well, I'd like to take exception to that. We've read in 1.11 that hedgerows are going to be 11.5 feet high. So if we look at the bottom picture there with those solar panels, has anyone in this room ever seen a hedge 11.5 feet high, which we're being told the hedge is going to, in 15 years, hide this. Now, what we've got to bear in mind for Stallington residents is that the very small estate, which doesn't belong to the oldest estate, most of them are homes plus, some are privately bought. There are two blocks of flats there, So when they are standing in their windows, their living room windows, first of all, they're going to, at certain times of the day, have the glint and the glare from the solar panels, because we've read that mass solar panels can give a lake effect. So that bottom picture there, okay, if I'm standing on the road, I'm walking my dog and I'm looking across there, maybe I won't see the solar panels, but no hedge is going to hide those from the residents who face that. No hedge at all. I'm also concerned about, we touched very lightly on the wildlife. There's going to be nocturnal disruption with insects, and I'm wondering, I can't find anywhere that there's going to be security lighting. I would imagine that that's going to be used during construction. I'm not sure what's going to be used when the site has actually been built. But we know that the inverters are going to be emitting a load continually, in particular when there's been a really hot day and they're cooling down. That's when we will be having quite a loud hum from those solar panels. It just concerns me that it's so huge. The same lady who spoke about the vast majority, you wouldn't be able to see them, mentioned that Sadley Green Road would be upgraded. How does anyone know that? Highways certainly haven't made any statement about that, so I'm not inclined to think that that will happen. But I just think the cumulative impact of these solar panels throughout the number of fields that we went to have a look at will be decimated by this solar panel farm. The very construction of them, we don't know how long that's going to take, but HGVs, work traffic, the laying of the panels, I'm sorry, I haven't heard anything yet that has made me think that yes, this is a good idea, and we hear that the grid is struggling to use the energy that's generated by these panels, and that there's almost a huge wait before they start to use the energy. So I will wait to hear what everyone else has got to say.
Yeah, Tom? Yep, okay, thank you. In terms of the relationship with the properties in Sallington, so Sallington Village is here, the viewpoint at the mini roundabout is here. So you can see the standoff between the panels and these properties in relation to the development itself. So it's not like they're in the immediate foreground of those properties. So it is going to be some distance away, two fields away from that location. In terms of the impact on wildlife, obviously we've had all the technical reports that have been provided, and the council's biodiversity officer is satisfied that we've got the level of information we need subject to conditions. So in terms of wildlife, we're satisfied the impact would be acceptable. And in relation to the roads, there aren't any improvements proposed to Sadley Green Road other than sort of the visibility displays that we provided here on this plan here. And in terms of lighting, we've got conditions 14 and 22 in the report, which are on pages 58 and 61. So that's 14 and 22 require details of external lighting. So that would be a condition of any approval.
Chairman, I will just come back on that the residents of the blocks of flats have a stunning view, which is going to be completely spoiled. Their visual immunity will disappear.
I've got Councillor Beattie and Councillor Edgler. I can't remember who went first.
No, I can't remember what I was going to say. So,
so we'll go. And Edgler there.
Shall I go?
Oh, you go.
Thank you very much. Okay. Yeah. Yes, we need electricity. But I'm sure there's other ways of producing electricity, and I know there is another way, and there's something to do with new. I don't understand what I'm talking about, so please excuse me. You know, there's other ways of producing electricity. You know, we're human beings, and we need food as well. And this is on agricultural land. You know, we've seen the cows in the field, and you know, we just need that land to be able to, for the animals and that to be able to feed on and what have you. And what I don't understand, why aren't we putting solar panels on all the buildings, on the top of buildings and industrial buildings and that, instead of decimating our lovely green fields, you know? And I'm a bit concerned about the wildlife and the impact it's going to have on the wildlife. We've mentioned somewhere about deer and having put in fencing up to protect deer, and so I'm worried about the wildlife. And also, again, no consultations taking place with the public, which is quite worrying, actually, to listen to what people's views are. I know we've got the consultation, you know, what's being done with the people, the public in here, but no consultation by the developers. So, for all the reasons I've mentioned, really, I'm really not happy with this application. Thank you.
Can I go to Councillor Beattie?
Yes,
we had your hand up first.
It was on the grey belt, that was my question. The implication was that grey belt was grey belt. What we're saying here is it's grey belt until it's reverted back to green belt. But, no? So it'll always be grey belt, will it? So it'll be open to development even when this site finishes.
Well, yeah, I suppose you could have the National Planning Policy Framework.
So once it's Greenbelt, it's never going to be Greenbelt again, that's
what. Well, we don't know. I suppose it depends if there's any changes in policy.
Well, we understand that too.
Yeah.
As we speak now, that is the situation, that this Greenbelt will be development land of the future.
We'd have to assess each one on its merits, really.
We can only apply national policy.
I understand. I've got the
answer to what it is. Yeah, at this moment in time.
But once it's been developed on, that's it. You can't use the argument that it's green belt, is that right?
Yeah.
No, it's still forms part of the
green
belt, designated green belt.
Well, your argument to say that it's previously undeveloped to it's been developed on, but we can revert it back. It's weaker, isn't it?
Doesn't apply.
I've got Councillor Andy McGordon. Would you first? Sorry.
Is that okay?
Yep.
I'd just like to again delve into this grey belt debate. Look at page 16, paragraph 3.28, the overall conclusion. It mentions there paragraph 155, parts A, B, and C. I then want to look at part B of that, which is there's a demonstrable unmet need this type of element proposed. Now, I'm exploring that further. But looking at the UK's general sort of green energy infrastructure being proposed, there is 50,000 megawatts of wind farms that are in proposal or have been given granted permission in the UK. This solar farm is going to produce 30 megawatts. So it's actually only going to produce 0.06% of green energy when if you look at just the wind farms that are being proposed. So therefore I really do have issue with there is a demonstrable unmet need when it is only providing 0.06% of green energy infrastructure capacity coming up.
I think you've just got to, it's clear that there's an unmet need for electricity. If you applied that to housing, you'd have to say that we shouldn't be approving any housing development if it's a small scale housing development, because you've got to apply it across the board. So we'd be saying, oh, these 20 houses, you can't, we're not going to approve those 20 houses because they're.
Sorry, but we do, because we do say on demonstrable need, if they say there's five bedroom houses in a place, whereas we're saying, but there needs to be some two-bedroom houses. No demonstrable need for five-bedroom houses, but there is for two-bedroom houses. So we do apply that to housing.
In terms of, I'm talking about how five-year housing land supply. That's what I'm talking about in the concept of when we're assessing unmet need for residential developments, the same situation would apply to this.
I feel, in my discussion argument here, I feel there's been, I think the weight of the energy, the green energy that's been placed on this to designate it as grey belt, I don't think is strong enough given the amount of energy that's going to be produced through green energy through other methods in better places that they aren't going to be impacting the green belt. That is my argument.
Peter, I'll come to you after Andy McNaughton.
Okay, well, I was going to say it was on the visual impact. So when I was sitting in the minibus going on the site visit, I did seem to spend most of the time looking out the window at a wall of green because it was either sunken lanes or tall hedges and trees. And we had to find sort of five specific viewpoints to be able to look where the solar farm might be. And the sort of the simulation, I didn't think that looked particularly bad. And about the point with the flats and their view, I think I learned some time ago that people say that when you buy a house or you rent a house, you don't actually get the view that comes with it necessarily. So I'm not sure that that's valid.
Thank you. Councillor Peter Edgela.
All I'd like to bring up, in fact, it was mentioned, in fact, that very briefly, that there are alternative sites. My question is, where are those alternative sites? And do they match, in actual fact, what this site, in actual fact, is designated to give? And would they be more appropriate?
Yeah, there's no requirement to look at alternative sites for this type of development. So although there may be an assessment done, it's not a requirement of policy for us to assess that.
Councillor Anagin.
Yeah. Has any investigations been done about whether, or if this went ahead, whether this would be able to be joined up to the national grid? Because my understanding is we've got one solar panel area within our Staffordshire and Stafford area that has been built, but it's not tied up or whatever you call it, to the national grid, because the national grid cannot take the capacity for what the solar panels are producing. So has any investigation been done on that?
Yes, yeah, the applicants have done a full investigation, and that should be set out in the update report on page 16. Sorry, 5.1 of the matters. And there it sets out about how there's been an agreement with the distribution network operator. So that sets out the proposed links to the national grid.
Page
71,
5.1.
Yeah.
Alex
Sandyford? Yeah, I just, again, with agreeing with Council Hood's comments over Stanton closed flats. Reality is it's actually a lot closer to the field than the map gives credit for. They're a lot higher than they actually look when you walk up the stairs to the flats. I agree with Council Hood's comments over the glint and the view. And to be honest, there's nothing within the application that's going to convince me that the site's in fact grey belt whatsoever. It's within the North Staffordshire Green Belt, it is Green Belt, and I'm just never going to be convinced over the argument that it's grey belt.
Thank you. Scott Spencer.
I just want to check with officers that we are assessing this application on the 40-year lifespan that entails this application as well.
That's condition three. Counselor.
Okay, so in that respect then, we also have to look at and consider how the area could potentially change over that 40-year lifespan and this effect that this development could have on that or the expansion of areas around it on this. Is that correct? If we're assessing this on the 40-year lifespan, then surely we have to assess how the landscape will change around it in that time.
That's unpredictable.
Yeah. I think as well, we must put a bit of clarification on Councillor Dobson's observations about the development in the area. So he refers to 700 houses to the east of Savile Green. We're not aware of any housing developments to the east of Savile Green in terms
not in our county.
It's not, yeah,
with
not
in
Staffordshire
Stafford Borough. And then the other site for 300 houses that he refers to is actually to the north of the A50.
Yeah, with respect, I'm not taking into account anything what's been proposed or not, but in 40 years' time, as you said, we do not know what's going to be proposed. It doesn't matter if someone says, oh, it's going to be 700, it's not going to be. In 40 years' time, there is going to be development along the A50 corridor and around Stoke-on-Trent. There's no denying that, because it's happening year on year. And of course, the new targets are being supplied by the government and our ever-increasing population. That is going to happen. And if we're meant to look at this application, and the fact it is temporary over 40 years, we have to look at how its impact will be over those 40 years of its lifespan and what is going to encroach it or not. Because if we're looking at the grey belt as regards encroachment of, you know, in how it impacts and so forth, and so forth, on towns and so forth, Fulford could become a town, Stanford could become a town, Blybridge as a town could extend towards it, Stone could. So I don't understand, we can't look at it today. We've got to look at it surely over its whole 40 year lifespan.
No, you need to look at the impact of the proposal on the situation as it stands today. Because, for instance, we're dealing with a large number of major house building schemes on the edge of the key service villages.
You
can't consider, oh, this could happen in 10 years' time, that could happen in 10 years' time. You can't apply that. You need to the consideration of those schemes. You've got to apply the situation as it stands now.
Okay, then I'll just follow up and say I don't think that this is demonstrated as paragraph 155, section B, the conclusion. I don't think it does. I don't think the officers, what we discussed before, demonstrates what unmet need for standard development.
Can I
don't know, can you explain to me how this is a demonstrable unmet need?
Nationally, I think it's agreed that there is a drive for low carbon zero.
Yeah.
Stafford Borough have declared a climate emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So we accept nationally there is an unmet need for renewables. Now, but if you have your NPPF there.
Yes, we have, Richard.
Yeah, so it's paragraph 168. And that's what's referred to in that in the report. So when determining planning applications for all forms of renewable and low carbon energy development and their associated infrastructure, local planning authorities should, and then A, not require applicants to demonstrate the overall need for renewable or low carbon. So it's not the contribution. You can't say that because it's only contributing this amount towards those goals, that it's unacceptable, because that wouldn't accord with paragraph 168.
If the applicants don't need to show a need, yet the officers are saying, oh, but we're saying it's grey belt because there's a deficit.
There's an unmet need, nationally.
So don't those two statements conflict?
No, because 168 is saying that they don't need to demonstrate the overall need, so their contribution towards it. We accept there is a need. Nationally, there's an unmet need for renewable energy.
I told you there isn't.
Councillor Andy McNaughton and then Peter Jones.
Yeah, I was just going to say, looking at paragraph 3.23 about the previous appeals that were mentioned, that where the actual appeals were upheld. And so you're thinking that if we go against this, if we don't approve it, it's quite likely that it would go to appeal and the appeal would win. Is that your opinion? And how much would it cost the council if that appeal?
Depends if we were, if there's a claim of costs against the authority. You also need to be aware that in the addendum report, we have saw a consultation comments of the planning policy manager. He agrees with officer's assessment that this area of land does constitute radar.
So you think any appeal would be upheld, do you think? people's opinion.
Well, if members were to disagree with officers that it's not grey belt, it's green belt, there is a counter argument in that you would apply very special in paragraph. It's under green belt.
Yeah.
1-6. But can I refer you to 160? So, when located in the green belt, elements of many renewable energy projects will comprise inappropriate developments. In such cases, developers will need to demonstrate very special circumstances if projects are to succeed. And then it goes on. So.
Proceed, not succeed.
Sorry.
What are the very special circumstances in this case?
I think it's called.
Need for renewable energy.
Yeah.
To achieve what?
What?
That's what that's the weight we would attach to it as a very special circumstance.
It has to be significant weight.
At what point? Sorry. At what point is the need met? Who demonstrates? Who decides that the need is met? That there's enough green energy. At what figure?
Well,
is there enough?
Well, national government have they created 2040 somewhere?
How many megawatt needs to be met for it to be met?
Probably need to ask the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Okay. We've been very sort of thinking about it, but I think that's a very important figure we need to know.
Peter
Jones
just
not
spoken
that?
Yet.
I
haven't spoken yet.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, sure. I was just coming back to what Scott had said. We're expected to believe that in 40 years' time this is all going to be scrapped anyway. We don't even know who the Prime Minister is going to be in 2 weeks' time. That's all I was going to say.
Just been alerted. Page 9.
Thomas
goes to
the hard document.
Government targets on climate change and delivery of renewables.
Point 2.9 on page.
Page 9, 2.3.
Yeah.
So if you read that, that sets out.
Page 9.
Reducing net greenhouse gas emissions from the 1990 level by 100% by 2050, which is known as the net zero target. And then further to that, during 2023, the government made a commitment to reduce emissions by 78% by 2035. So that's come from both governing parties for the last several years.
I'll come back to you on that.
Andy McNaughton?
Just a quick point on that. I think you mentioned previously, we have, as a borough council, declared a climate emergency and brought down the time for net zero to 2030, I think. So I sometimes think we can get stuck on cross purposes and what we argue about. We argue about one thing one day and one another. We don't necessarily look at the fact that one is going to cause some problems with the other.
Anyone else wish to speak?
The target we're actually looking for is 130 gigawatt, I believe, which I've just searched there. We currently produce 30% or thereabouts by green energy. So the proposed wind farms, if they are at 50 gigawatt, that would be approximately 40%, an additional 40%, which would take us to 70%. That's before 2030. Again, this is it's such a minuscule amount of electricity. This is going to reduce for such a significant loss of such an impact on the local communities. I do not see how it's sustainable, or the argument for it to be grey belt is there, or that the need is there either, when there are such huge green energy projects coming online. They will produce tenfold more power than this, hundredfold more.
Yeah.
It's really
but we only have to can only deal with what's before.
I know, yeah, but we also have to look at the need.
Jill Hood, do you want to say something,
just
Richard?
Just going back to paragraph 168 of the MPFPF, and under criteria B, recognise that small scale and community led projects, and I'm referring to small scale here, in terms of the national national picture, a valuable contribution to cutting greenhouse gas emissions. So
yeah.
They're looking at all scales of development as
but
being
this
appropriate.
This is not small scale.
Not community led.
Small scale would be on your house. Solar panels on your house.
That's my point. But
I think it's where we need to look at the inspector's decisions that we referred to in here, where all the inspector's decisions on appeals are referring to attaching significant weight to the general need. So the planning inspectorate is applying significant weight in all circumstances to the need.
I suppose we refused that application last week, didn't we, at Airculture in open countryside, by the impact it would have on quite some distant properties, but we still refused it. You helped us with the grounds to make
that
objection.
Well, members arrived at three reasons for refusal. One was impacts on the setting of designated heritage assets. Second one was the visual impact of the scheme on certain areas of the locality. And the third was glint and glare. Members didn't come up with a reason for refusal, saying that that scheme's contribution was so insignificant that it didn't want refusal on that ground.
I think there
needs to be some consistency here.
Because the redesignation from Greenbelt to Greybelt is based on the demonstrable need of electricity in that application.
Yeah.
It wasn't. We weren't changing something from Greenbelt to Greybelt because it was not given that designation. So therefore, we didn't need to discuss that or bring that into the argument.
But the reasons why we objected last week could be applied to this
they
one.
They could be, but I think
the
reason about
renewable.
The renewables doesn't apply. It didn't apply to the previous one. It does to this because it's fundamentally the argument for this being grey belt over green belt.
But in last week's case, it was given, in the overall balance, the need was given significant weight in that case when the overall balance was taken into account, which is the requirement you're required to do.
And the recording will state show that I brought this argument up then, there, at that time, but it was felt that the reasons we gave were maybe more pertinent for the application at that time.
That's right. Jill Hood?
Yeah, I just want to yet again point out that this firm has come to us asking us to sacrifice an enormous amount of greenbelt towards this application. They are giving nothing back to the local community. There's been a carrot thrown in about an improvement on a road which can't be proven, we don't know anything about. You know, how many times have people coming to this planning committee and telling us what they're going to take off us with no offer whatsoever giving back to the local community? And I haven't come up with a statement yet whereby I'm going to say I don't support this planning application, because I do not support this planning application, and I'm making notes about why I don't support this.
Okay, anyone? Andy McNaughton?
Well, just on that point though, somebody else somewhere has got a solar farm and is sending the electricity to us. You know, we can't just say what benefit are we getting out of it. It's the national interest, surely, that supplies electricity to the entire country, and some people somewhere got to pull up with the fact they've got a solar farm. So, you know, if they're all going to be like very narrow minded and just what's in it for us, it's hard to call that looking at the national interest.
Any more? Anything new?
I was just going to say the same thing. I agree with you wholeheartedly, but not everybody can give you something, but I mean, they are putting something into the national reserve. Well, there would be if
they were going around. Okay, right. Not talking. Is anybody?
I mean, Chair. I mean, I'm going to refuse on that. There's a non-demonstrable need for this type of development to to change from the green belt to the grey belt in this location. I just feel that the matrix for green belt to grey belt is very woolly. There's no specific factual base, it's just on an opinion. And the requirement, if this is demonstrated or need, is also an opinion based on this current situation. I fundamentally disagree with it, and I think that's the reason for refusal. If it's strong, I don't know, but that's my opinion. Chair.
Thank you.
I mean, yeah, I mean, in addition to the point 2.3 on page 10 of the report, 3.1, 3.2, that refers to various statements, national statements,
mm-hmm.
House of Commons, Library.
Mm-hmm.
So are you saying basically in view of what's been quoted there,
mm-hmm.
there isn't an unmet need? Or are you looking at a local unmet need?
I'm looking at the
I think it has to be national.
The weight that's been provided, given to this development and the capacity which is going to put into the network is negligible compared to the impact of changing this from green belt to grey belt would have and the harm that would bring.
It's agricultural,
but it's but we're not looking at the we're not looking at the size of the contribution, we're looking at any contribution towards
any.
An unmet need.
Which should always attract significant weight in the balance as well. Any need, any contribution to need should always be afforded significant weight in the balance.
Mm-hmm.
So even if members disagreed with officers and said it wasn't grey belt, it's green belt,
mm-hmm.
very special circumstances apply,
mm-hmm.
our advice to you would be that the very special circumstances are the need.
So it attracts.
And that's
a substantial
way,
And that's looking at other appeal decisions.
Yeah. Councillor Francis Beattie.
Going back to the point I made, if you look at 3.4 on page 10, protecting the green belt, the fundamental aim of green belt policy is to prevent urban sprawl. We already have. Urban sprawl adjacent to this site, and it seems to me that is one of the reasons that might be relevant in assessing it. Because on the grounds that if it is becomes grey belt, it's going to be grey belt. It's not going to.
Yeah, we addressed that point on 3.21 on page 14. So.
I think you've got different pages.
It's 3.21, page 14.
3.21, that one.
You may disagree with the officer's assessment. But again, you have the A50
to the
south of Live Bridge, which forms quite a significant buffer. You've then got Stellington, Savile Green, Fulford.
Is this fact, or is that your opinion?
That's officer's opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. So one could look at it the other way. With great respect to the officers.
So in terms of paragraph 143, what you're saying is, in terms of the five purposes, this wouldn't satisfy the first criteria in that it wouldn't check the unrestricted sprawl of large built-up areas. Is that what you're saying?
Mm.
That's members'
yes.
opinion.
Because it's now become green belt.
But there is also, as you can see on the slide here, there is quite a buffer between the A50 and the development site as well. So, for example, here's the A50 in blue. So the red line of the application site is here, so it's not as if the site is abutting the actual conurbation itself and large urban areas.
I think the chairman, through you, Chairman, the worry is that we're in a position where it's very difficult to object to any solar farm applications, wherever they want to put them across the whole of the borough.
Well, That's what we're here for.
Because there's government guidelines saying that, or government stipulation that we have to accept the national need. So, we in our hearts we know that this is the wrong scheme in the wrong place. But we've been told that national need overrides everything that is common sense is telling us.
All as officers, all we're trying to advise you is that in terms of the principle of development in the site being located in the agreement on greybelt land, we consider that the principle is acceptable. Now, as a committee, you may wish to consider other matters, visual impact that's been raised, for instance. Going back to last week's debate, there were three reasons for refusal. One was visual impact, not impact on landscape character, because that's slightly different. I think, Lucy, in terms of the Droneton appeal, we were quite careful in how we worded that reason for refusal, and that saved us being awarded costs.
In terms of,
I'm not making any criticism of the officers.
No, we're just trying to advise you in terms of the principle of development. You may come up with other reasons for refusal.
At the moment, this is greenbelt. This is greenbelt land, and the only bit that's going to turn greybelt is within the boundary of this solar farm.
So
it will be surrounded by greenbelt.
So we have a number of schemes which we're dealing with at the moment, housing schemes, where the agents have put forward an argument that certain land is greybelt, around Barberton, for instance, and we have to assess those proposals on those individual merits.
But I suppose if you look at image plan one, if you can. So there we have green belt all the way around there, and then this application comes in, and the boundary of this application becomes grey belt, but it's surrounded by green belt.
What we're saying is this proposal satisfies the criteria for it being grey belt.
But if they've moved it 50 yards, 100 metres to the right, would that make it grey belt?
No, because it's on the merits of the individual case. So going back to the gypsy sites, we as officers didn't define that as grey belt, because at that time we had a surplus of gypsy pitches, and therefore there wasn't an unmet need because we had that surplus. And that's why the gypsy site failed on being defined as grey belt, and that's why we applied the green belt policy tests.
Andy McNaughton?
I'm just going to say this seems a bit like Schrodinger's green belt, straight grey belt, in that it's whatever you want it to be when you decide you're going to use it.
Just so I understand, the only metric as to why this has gone changed from green belt to grey belt, as I understand it, is because there's an unmet need for energy that the government has said.
I think we need to go through the various tests. So if we go to pay in the officer report, we go to page 14, and if we go back a page to 13 and paragraph 318, that sets up out the tests in paragraph 155 that you need to assess. So in order to represent greybelt land, it needs to meet those tests. So then on page 14 and 15 and 16, we then go through each individual test, and then we conclude as officers why we feel it meets that test. So if members want to take a different view, then you need to go through each test and say why it doesn't meet that test.
You direct me to where you argued 3.18a. Please.
3.21. So in the last sort of two sentences of that paragraph, we're concluding that it meets criteria A.
Because can you just exactly say to me which bit of the sentences you the officers feel section A meets section A?
Yeah. So if you start off with the moreover section,
yep.
It says, moreover, as consented, it's been sought for a temporary period, and then the land will be returned as close as practical to its former condition at the end of the period. The proposal would not introduce a permanent addition to the countryside, and therefore it meets criteria A.
So for this reason, rather than reasons,
yep.
Isn't it? For this reason, right.
Yeah. You have to refer back to the definition of grain belt, which
yeah.
refers you back to 143.
So yeah. Saying, because it's temporary, it would not undermine the purpose of the green belt, but
can I just ask again, once it's grey belt it stays grey belt, it doesn't go back to green belt?
It's a policy test. This proposal meets all the criteria for the application site form grey belt.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah.
So but it's also saying that it's going to revert, but what's it reverting to?
To greyish.
It's not reverting to green belt,
so
they're just removing all
very,
the
very, very basically, say in 40 years' time,
mm-hmm.
the site's decommissioned, it's put back to agriculture use. At that point, say we had another scheme and the same policy test applied, if that scheme couldn't meet all the criteria, it wouldn't be grey belt.
Mm-hmm.
So we attach the grey belt status on the basis of the proposal. It's not a policy designation as such.
Mm-hmm.
It's
no,
attached
I
to the proposal.
Understand, but the implication is that it will become a policy designation.
I just explore A again, so would undermine the purpose of the green belt. By changing it, surely it has undermined it by taking a swathe of the green belt away. Never mind what. It says, oh, because we need electricity or because we need whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
If you designate something as green belt, it's there to protect that area. And when they were saying, oh, no, we can just say whatever we want. And by saying whatever we want, we're therefore undermining the purpose of the green belt. The green belt is there specifically to stop development.
Yeah.
And but by coming up with some sort of counter argument, we therefore have undermined that the purpose of the green belt, surely.
Yeah, I agree.
So I don't see how we met section 8.
I think it's section 8, look, in terms of checking the unrestricted sprawl of large built up areas, if you look as well below paragraph 3.21.
I understand it refers to towns,
yeah.
I understand that,
yeah.
But it's the fundamental of the green, that therefore saying. But a lot of the green belt is formed away from towns to stop the sprawl of the city generally, which it surrounds. So, if there's not a town nearby, therefore the green belt can be discounted. I don't think that was not the purpose of the green belt designation in its fundamental way it was done in the 1940s. It undermines it. I can't put it any other way.
There's
no point having a green belt if you can come across with an argument and say, well, because of this, we're going to make a grey belt, therefore the green belt doesn't apply. By doing that, you undermine the fundamentals of green belt.
So,
that's what the government's done.
Okay, so members, in terms of this particular argument that you have,
yes.
Points.
Yes.
Within your copies of the MPPF, there's a glossary, or there should be on page 73, and there's a definition of grey belt. Can you see that?
Yep.
Okay. So in terms of the definition, it's the previously developed land and or any other land that, in either case, does not strongly contribute to any of the purposes of there, A, B and D. So part of the policy test is that you have to satisfy A, B and D of 143, and they're the five purposes. And what you're saying is, in your opinion,
mm-hmm.
you don't think this checks the unrestricted sprawl. Is that correct?
Yes, because it undermines the fundamentals of the Greenbelt, yes.
Okay, so that's Chris's opinion, then. That's your opinion. And
I think we've
tried to advise you.
Yeah.
I think if it goes to appeal, I feel that we've looked to all the different policies and we're applying, as the officers have applied their opinion, we've applied our opinion with
okay.
the facts that are presented to us and the different policies that are given to us.
Okay.
So I think if it was to go to appeal, I cannot see how if members are worried about it being awarded costs.
Okay.
Surely these are correct assumptions.
So what you're saying is basically it fails paragraph 143A.
Yeah.
And in doing so, it doesn't constitute Greybelt land.
Greybelt. Yes.
Sorry. Okay. So because what members are saying is, because it fails the grey belt test, in your opinion, the policy designation of this site is green belt.
Correct.
Okay. And therefore, you then need to look at, because renewable energy schemes are not one of the exempted forms of development in the Greenbelt,
mm-hmm.
it is by definition inappropriate,
mm-hmm.
and therefore you need to apply very special circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And it's members need to now consider the weight you apportion to those very special circumstances in the planning balance.
Special circumstances being, again,
The need for renewable energy,
which this contributes towards.
I refer back to the argument I made about its proportionality of this development towards the national sort of framework of renewables that are coming online and are proposed.
So,
do you think then that the protection of the Greenbelt outweighs the rush towards renewable energy?
I do, when technology is advancing to such a degree now that the generation capacity of solar panels is increasing almost logarithmically with the fact that there's different technologies coming in with different ways they can be manufactured and different triple layered and working shades and so on, that you could have a significantly reduced solar farm that produces more potentially energy in 5 years' time, 2 years' time, and also compared to the wind farm that's coming online recently as well.
Ali?
So
couldn't you also argue that there's actually no need for the application given the number of applications approved nationally already hits the target set by the government?
No, because those targets are still unmet. So going back to Councillor Spencer's trying to think this through.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying it's grey belt, fails mm-hmm. the green belt,
yes.
fails the grey belt policy test.
Mm-hmm.
Fails to protect the green belt.
Therefore, what you're saying is the limited contribution
mm-hmm.
that this scheme would put forward
to the national
unmet need.
Yes. And I'd like to reference
as a very special circumstance,
mm-hmm.
you are apportioning less weight.
Indeed, I'd like to make reference, if it goes to whatever it does, the proposals for wind farms that are coming online that have been approved by government, which are in the gigawatt
capacity,
you need to consider this application on the merits of its case, not against wind farms.
30 megawatts is significant, is a very, very small contribution to the max.
So you're only affording like moderate weight rather than significant weight to it in the overall balance.
If we've got to get 130 gigawatt by 2030, 30 megawatt is neither here nor there. And with the impact, with the implication for the Greenbelt in this location.
More weight to the Greenbelt.
Indeed, more weight to the Greenbelt, sorry.
Moderate weight to the very special circumstances.
Yeah.
So you're only applying moderate weight
to
energy, to the renewable contribution, to the scheme's contribution towards the unmet need.
For this scheme, yes, but due to the limited energy production.
I'm not aware of the reason for that. We're just saying we're not aware of any other decisions which have been made on that basis.
They've all apportioned significant weight to need.
Just because it hasn't happened before doesn't mean it doesn't can happen now, does it? If you say we can put that to anything, well, we've always done it this way, therefore.
Okay, I'm just all what I'm trying to say to you is we're looking at other appeal decisions where inspectors have afforded significant weight to that issue. You could be open to an award of costs on an appeal.
Yeah, I think that's always the argument.
If you're adamant you want to go with that, as officers are only advising you, but you need to be aware of any potential cost claims.
What would the cost claim be?
It would be in terms of the how you've arrived at the planning balance.
Yeah.
In terms of that, you've apportioned different weight to that matter, in contrary to other appeal decisions.
I think it's the erosion of the green bar. I think if we're looking at net zero, we have to look at net zero on the balance of everything, not just on energy, but also on green infrastructure, which the green belt is. Is it not?
Has there been a case where the appeal has gone on the Greenbelt side?
Yes, these ones at Walsall. Yeah. Walsall and the West Midlands one in Solihull, in paragraph 3.23, they're both in the Greenbelt. Mm-hmm. In very similar locations, the West Midlands Greenbelt and that in those cases, to the south of it.
I worry though that we're always told to, sorry, through Chair, we have to look at this application on its own. But then we're suddenly saying, oh, well, but an appeal on this other side, this happened and this happened. Should we even be taking that into consideration if we are meant to be looking at this application?
Yes. How many times have we heard you say we're not considering that application?
No, the reason why you're being given that advice is that the government have attached significant weight to renewable energy.
Mm.
And when councils have not followed waiting or not given justifiable reasons for the waiting, the appeal has been overturned. That's the thing. So you don't have to follow officer's recommendation, but you have to give sound reasoning and decision making and justification for it.
Okay, can I also add then, because it's on the A50 corridor, which you know is a prime location for development, as proven as you talked to Blackbridge of all the different developments, it's such a communications hub that this is an area that really is crying out. People, developers want to come in and do things. So that is another reason why doing this would erode the Greenbelt in this location, because of its proximity to the A50.
And then you also need to consider the other harms, which would be the loss of openness. So are members, what's members' thoughts on the impact on openness of the development? So that's, we need you to take a view really on what your thoughts are.
It's not just one bit of the test, you have to apply the whole test.
Can I just read out the introductory paragraph to the Greenbelt section in the MPPF? This is paragraph 142. The government attaches great importance to Greenbelts. The fundamental aim of Greenbelt policy is to prevent urban sprawl by keeping land permanently open. The essential characteristics of green belts are their openness and their permanence. So one of the factors that you need to consider is impact and openness as well in your consideration of this application.
Permanence as well.
And permanence.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of permanence, it is temporary.
Yeah. So those are similar reasons to where we were last week.
Different,
no,
this
is to do with applying the test.
Yes.
This is the test, the green belt test.
But we still have the visual impact.
Yeah, but
we can come on
that's later. This is purely to do with if the committee is saying no, we don't think this is grey belt, we think it's green belt, you've got to go through the test to determine it. Because that's part of the decision making
process.
And
then the weight that you attach to the loss of openness in this case as well.
I suppose the lack of openness is because of I've seen where the green belt boundary is in this location, and it's almost close to kind of cutting off the A50 down to Fulford section of the green belt between here and Modley and Forsbrook and to the south west Hilton and so forth. So you're almost sort of breaking up the green belt potentially in this area, and would that come into effect of openness potentially?
And it's the quantum of the
development. Okay. So just for clarification, you've resolved that this site doesn't qualify as grey belt.
Mm-hmm.
It's green belt,
mm-hmm.
and therefore renewable energy schemes are by definition inappropriate development in the green belt,
mm-hmm.
and therefore when assessing openness,
mm-hmm.
are you saying that the scale of development would have an acceptable impact on openness?
Without doubt, yes.
It's about 92 football pitches.
Because it will bring together three villages in Stallington, Savory Green and Fulford.
Is that due to the quantum of development?
So you're saying because of the scale of the development and
mm-hmm.
that's the concerns, and that although that's temporary, it's still... And then you'll need to apply the weight that you've attached to that, so are you saying that there's moderate weight to that harm, or are you saying there's significant weights? The harm to openness.
If you were walking on the footpaths that intersect this location, I would say that you would be significant fine. You would not feel that you're in open green belt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
especially if you have 3.6 metre high bushes.
Indeed.
So when you're applying the MPPF. You look at paragraph 153. When considering any planning application, local planning authorities should ensure that substantial weight is given to any harm to the greenbelt, including harm to its openness.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is you want to apportion substantial weight to the impact on openness.
It's
is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Andy?
Just one point. If that was built, would it automatically turn the surrounding countryside into green belt? Because then to build anything on that would be urban sprawl. So in a way, because it's in the middle, it's actually protecting the surrounding countryside.
No, because that was the green belt argument. What happens to it?
Well, it would, because if it's not sprawl at the moment, which is right in the middle, if it doesn't, when somebody builds something in the next field, that you couldn't do that because it's sprawl, because it's expanding that area, surely.
Does that live in page 47, that 160, does that have any impact on what we're discussing here?
Page 47?
47 on the MPPF, 160.
That's right.
Page 47.
Yeah, that's right.
So, so in terms of what Councillor Edge was saying, it's paragraph 160. When located in the green belt, elements of many renewable energy projects will comprise inappropriate development. So because what you're saying that this scheme, in your opinion, does not constitute greybelt land.
Mm.
It's therefore by definition greenbelt.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore you apply 160, it's an appropriate development.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, as we've just said, you then apply the openness test.
Yes.
And that leads through.
Yeah.
So that kind of, that's why the councillor I just query on.
Would that be, through you, Chair, sorry, robust enough a reason for us to be able to vote on?
We're not.
What I'm saying is, sorry, is that, I'm not trying to influence the vote, what I'm saying is, can that be, that statement alone, can I submit that as a statement as part of reason for refusal?
It's what balance we apply, isn't it, as opposed to...
I can't say in terms of the strength of that reason for refusal.
No.
But it would...
Does it hold up the test?
It would hold with it. It would be a planning reason for refusal.
That's what I meant.
And we're not giving... We're not trying to...
No. I'm not asking you
give any opinion
no.
in terms of what we consider the strength of that reason for refusal
no.
would be.
But it is a reason. But it is a reason.
It's a planning reason for refusal.
Thank you. Chair, if that is the case, I'd like to put that forward as a reason.
Yeah, we've had a good go at this one, haven't we? So,
I would like to put that the openness test with regards to it's not grey belt, it's green belt. And the planning weight that's been apportioned to the is greater than what we were.
Just me to just try and clarify.
Yes, please.
Please. Please.
Can you just rewrite this down?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you might have to.
Okay.
Just because Councillor Spencer put it the wrong way.
So Councillor Spencer. So
yes.
Reading this through, members consider that this scheme does not satisfy paragraph 143A
mm-hmm.
in terms of urban sprawl.
Mm-hmm.
And because it doesn't satisfy that criteria,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't constitute greybelt.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, by definition, we're assessing this scheme against greenbelt policy.
Yes.
Therefore, the scheme is not an exempt form of development, and therefore, by definition, constitutes inappropriate development.
Mm-hmm.
You were about to say that, weren't you?
Oh, exactly. Word for word.
Therefore, given the substantial scale
mm-hmm.
of the scheme,
mm-hmm.
you consider that it would have an adverse impact on greenbelt openness.
Correct.
To which you're attaching, in terms of what the paragraph 153 says, substantial weight.
Yes.
Everyone got that?
Yeah.
Yes.
And then they need to go on the very special circumstances.
Yeah.
So in terms of, yeah, so in applying the very special circumstances, you
mm-hmm.
don't consider that.
The need.
The amount of very special circumstances.
The scheme wouldn't amount to very special circumstances.
I didn't
need the need for the scheme.
In terms of the need for the scheme in its contribution.
Underlies the greenbelt weight.
It doesn't outweigh the harms that you've identified.
It doesn't outweigh the harms, exactly.
The greenbelt, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
In terms of inappropriateness and loss of openness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Need to walk upstairs.
Yeah.
So you've assessed greenbelt
mm-hmm.
policy test.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other issues that the committee wishes to raise in terms of the scheme?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you're happy with the visual impact?
Mm-hmm. Well,
unlike the scheme last week.
I think the receptors for the visual impact are significant reducers than were in the scheme previously. Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Can we
just
check that
the
visual impact
is
that's the way of the green belt.
Unless we look at the public footpaths and that obviously they will be impacted if you were to include.
Could that be lost on
there? It's not for the officers to include it.
No, sorry, apologies.
Yeah. It's for
the members to
can we
follow
include
on
loss
with
of
the
public
debate.
Enjoyment then?
Do you think it's just strong enough to leave it on the impact on the Green Belt and the weight?
It's not for us to say.
No,
to
I mean,
I think that is in this circumstance is a strong argument. I think I worry that other losses have been demonstrated could be mitigated through other means in this application. And therefore, if it was to go to appeals and like that, it only has to be one argument that is weak for it to fail.
Okay. So on that reason that you've put forward, you're still happy to do that in the face of the planning policy manager agreeing with the report?
Yeah, because it is opinion only. It's not based on any metric.
So members have come up with a different apportionment in the planning balance.
Mm-hmm.
So it has been proposed. Yes, have we agreed that Scott has proposed it?
Well, no, all we've done is apply the Greenbelt test.
Right. Do you want to?
So you've the committee have so far established that, in their opinion, the land is not Greybelt, it is Greenbelt.
Mm.
You've then got to apply the special circumstances, which you've done. And now you've got to determine what else there is, if anything, as to why you're saying no.
It is the effect on the openness of the green, of the green belt.
Yeah, that's
yes.
that's included within
the
report.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Right. Who would like to second that?
I'll second that.
Councillor Alex Sandiford, second. We understand what we're voting on. Yes.
Can you just read it out again, please?
Members consider the scheme. Members consider the scheme represents under paragraph 143A represents ill and urban sprawl, and does not therefore constitute grey belts. It's therefore considered to be inappropriate development in a green belt, which by definition attracts significant weight, as does the harm to openness, which again we would attract significant weight to. In terms of the very special circumstances that are required to outweigh the harm to the green belt, members don't consider that the need for renewable energy outweighs the identified harms to the green belt, namely its inappropriateness and loss of openness, and therefore it's contrary to the National Planning Policy Framework section. So 160 of the National Planning Policy Framework.
Mm-hmm.
The local plan doesn't have a policy on Greenbelt. SP7 refers to the MPPF, refers it back to the MPPF.
Okay.
So there wouldn't be a local plan policy to back up that reason for refusal. It purely beyond those paragraphs.
Future, which is fine, because this designation to Grey Belt includes a national policy of energy framework anyway, was not based on any local plan reasoning.
Yes.
So that contradicts that as well, doesn't it? That's the counter argument for that.
Yeah, I mean, the local plan doesn't contain
that policy. It doesn't, no. So,
okay.
For that.
So that's why we're just quoting paragraphs from the MPPF.
Yeah.
You've got a first, you've got a proposal and a second.
So you all know what you're voting on. It's to refuse for those reasons. Please indicate if you support the proposal to refuse. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. 7 and Andy against,
yeah,
or abstains?
Because I think it contradicts with the council's green agenda, and also I think it's almost certainly going to lose the appeal.
Thank you.
As is
tradition, I'm abstaining. So, thank you very much for your time this morning. As we head towards the afternoon.